It's time for Windows Weekly, a great big show for you. Mary Jo Foley is bringing us, I think, probably the highest level guest we've ever had on the show. Microsoft's Chief Marketing Officer, Chris Cappicella, joins us to talk about the good, the bad, and the ugly in Microsoft's 2015. It's a show you're not going to want to miss. Stay tuned. Windows Weekly is next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Windows Weekly, episode 445, recorded Wednesday, December 23rd, 2015. Microsoft Marketing Chief Chris Cappicella. Windows Weekly is brought to you by FreshBooks, the super simple cloud accounting software that's giving thousands of freelancers and small businesses the tools to save time billing and get paid faster. Try it free at FreshBooks.com/Windows. It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley, our last episode of 2015, and they're looking good. Mary Jo even has put a Christmas tree in her apartment, which is amazing, given that it's the,
that would be amazing.
The size of a dime. Mm-hmm. Where you are in Rhode Island at your sissy's.
I am. I'm at my sister's. Place.
Thank you. It's very nice of you to do this, even though you're on vacation.
We never have vacation, Leo. We're always watching Microsoft at all times.
Even when Microsoft's not doing anything, like in December.
Well, I know one Microsoftie who's doing something. He's going to be on the show today. You want to tell us about your special guest?
Yeah. Yeah, we're going to have Chris Cappicella on today, who is kind of a big deal at Microsoft. He's the head of all of marketing for the entire company. He's the chief marketing officer.
Holy cow.
Yeah. He's also a huge Windows Weekly fan. He listens to us every week, I believe.
Oh, now. Don't you get a little nervous now knowing that?
Yeah.
Now I do.
But yeah, he's been at Microsoft, I think, 24 years, maybe. Wow. He even was Bill Gates' speechwriter back
in
the day.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, the guy's been there. He knows all the secrets.
So let's pump him for some secrets.
Yeah, let's. Yeah, so he's going
to
be on.
It's very brave of him to be on the show, I might
add. I know. It is.
Not that I am going to be. I'm not going to say anything because I don't. I'm intimidated.
Nah, you'll like him. Oh. He's a good guy.
He's a good guy.
You like
him. Wow. Good guy.
Yeah.
That's a big deal. So we'll also do a little year in review.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of your picks as to the best moments and maybe the lowlights. Highlights and lowlights.
Yeah.
In Microsoft's world. I will
Were
tell
there lowlights?
No. But happy times. Actually, this was a big year for Microsoft.
It was.
Did Nadella become CEO in January? I think it was exactly a year ago. Or is that wrong?
I think February. February a year ago.
Almost exactly a year ago.
So almost 2 years now.
Next year will be two years. Okay.
Yeah. This coming February, it'll be 2 years, I believe.
Wow. And, of course, Windows 10 was this year. This has been an important year for them. Microsoft's first PC hardware ever. Which is kind of amazing.
Yep.
Well, I wish I'd brought my Surface Book for him to autograph. All right. So do you want to do some stuff before he gets here? You know what I should do before he gets here? The commercial.
Ah, okay.
Why don't we get that out of the way? I hate to say it that way because we're always happy to have commercials, but there's no reason to keep him cooling his heels. After I do the commercial, we'll bring on Microsoft's CMO.
Yep.
Chris Cap. Wow. I'm kind of blown away by all this. I'm nervous. I'm
no,
fraught.
No. Don't be nervous.
Leo, it's a Christmas miracle.
It's that.
It's okay.
It is that. Chris Cappicella joining us in just a little bit. But first, a word from our sponsor, FreshBooks. FreshBooks.com. If you're a freelancer, you know one of the most unpleasant, painful parts of your journey is doing those invoices at the end of the month. I used to hate that.
And I had to bill in Canadian dollars and U.S. dollars. That made it even crazier, you know, fire up Excel and Word and start creating that invoice. And then of course, you've got expenses. You got to file and got to get them in there, find all those receipts. I had a shoebox. Oh, that was good. Not anymore. Actually, starting in 2004, I started using FreshBooks, and it was a revelation. I encourage you to check it out. Now, 5 million people use FreshBooks, the super simple cloud accounting software. All you have to do is go to FreshBooks.com/Windows. You'll try it free for 30 days. What do you get? Well, first, your invoicing is going to be so much easier. It's beautiful invoices using their tool. You create them. They're professional. They've got your logo. Automatically do currency calculations. You can use the FreshBooks app on your smartphone to take pictures of your receipts, get them in. No more shoebox. That's so nice. If you do hours, you billable hours, no problem. You can track those hours online or on your phone, which makes it very easy. And then again, they automatically go into the invoice. And FreshBooks does some things you don't want to do, like dinging customers who don't pay on time, you know, a nice reminder, things like that. But the thing I like best about FreshBooks is customers do pay faster, on the average of 5 days faster, because it's easier for them. FreshBooks invoices, the email invoices, have a pay button. They use all the payment services. Clients like that because they want to make it as easy as possible for them, too. Just boom. You can even get paid up front. You can request a deposit in FreshBooks so you don't have to cover costs out of pocket or wait till the end of a project to get paid. I love FreshBooks. It was a lifesaver for me. This is really cool. I would have loved this. You got a tablet. You got FreshBooks on your tablet. You could pull up the invoice on your tablet. Maybe you're like you do home inspections or you know something where the client's right there. Put FreshBooks now has a card reader. It's an EMV chip card reader, so that means they can swipe the stripe or dip the chip and pay you right there. Love this. FreshBooks. This is just awesome. Wherever business takes you, you got your iPhone, you got your app, you got your money. I want you to try it free. 30 days, freshbooks.com/windows. Learn about it, all the things it can do. And all I ask is when they say, how did you hear about us? Put Windows Weekly in the section there where they ask that. Your 30-day free trial awaits. freshbooks.com/windows. And we thank FreshBooks so much for their support all year long of this and all of the other Twitch shows. We're waiting for Chris Kapp to join us, Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley. We're going to talk about Microsoft. I should have brought my Surface Book. I could have had him autograph it. It would have been so exciting. But he's not here yet. Alex, you're keeping an eye on him? Okay, he hasn't showed up yet. It is 2.25 minutes away from his scheduled time. And knowing this guy is a C-level executive at Microsoft, I'm figuring he'll show up exactly at the right time and not a minute before. He's got other things to do.
Leo, can you hear me right now?
I can.
He's there.
Oh.
We can't get him on Skype. Maybe he's going to come on now. Let's see.
Maybe he'd like to use Facebook Messenger instead.
Yeah.
There we go.
And we're good to go. Yeah. Oh, wait, no.
Now we can say hello to Chris Capicella.
He's in a Windows Weekly sandwich.
Yeah. Hey, Chris. Welcome.
Thanks so much. It's great to be on the show.
Wow. I'm just going to sit back because I don't want to get in trouble or anything. Nice to meet you.
It's nice to meet you as well.
Yeah. Chris is, for those who don't know, the chief marketing officer at Microsoft. C-level. Is this, I think, our first C-level guest on the show, so I'm excited. I mean, Mary Jo is obviously
I'm honored.
Such an Adela and so forth.
Right.
But yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
So I'm just going to step back and let you guys take it from here.
Great.
Yeah.
Well, one thing, Paul and I were talking before the show about what we wanted to ask you about, and we just did our, you know, kind of year in review for 2015, but I'd love to hear your year in review for Microsoft.
What a year, huh?
Because not only is Chris CMO, we should also mention he's on the senior leadership team at Microsoft, which means he's in the inner circle. He's like one of those guys who has the powwow every
the star
week.
Chamber.
I
yeah,
love it.
With the people. So he kind of knows like what was good, what maybe needed some improvement, kind of how I'd be interested how he'd grade Microsoft's year.
Well, you guys always do such a great job on the show. First of all, you know, I have been listening to the show for a really long time. A few years ago, we finally got a dog in our family, and that added a lot of walking time to my life. So my nice. Ability to listen, not view, but actually listen to the audio spiked pretty high. And, you know, you should know you guys are pretty incredibly accurate. It's always fascinating for me to sort of dial in and listen to your analysis of the whys and the hows, and obviously the what you always have, but the why behind it. I'm constantly sort of impressed at how correct you guys get so much of this stuff. And that's, you know, that's
now
a testament
he will list
to,
where we got it wrong.
Well, look, I have a sheet, you know, here. It's not always perfectly right, but it's the hit rate is pretty incredible. And so just listening in this morning as you guys started, I think I agree with, you know, most of the things that you listed. You know, Windows 10 for sure was an incredibly important release for us and milestone for us, and getting 110 million people to upgrade in the first 10 weeks. And that has continued to move in a really positive direction. And in the new year, we'll probably have more to share on the latest numbers there. But just getting the install base to be really large is so critical to getting developers back to writing Windows apps. And it's really our best shot at phone apps, as you have mentioned, you know, many times. That is the strategy to getting developers back in the fold. The fact that we've upgraded most of the Xbox Ones to Windows 10 already is a big step forward. You know, we delayed the Windows Phone, Windows Mobile rollout a little bit, but we're excited to get that finished and get all as many phones as we can possibly upgraded. But getting Windows 10 done, having it be well received, of course, some bumps along the way, as we would expect. That was a major milestone for us, and we've got to smooth out those bumps. We've got to get the upgrades happening more smoothly, more frequently. But creating this service is a huge benefit for the year. You know, there's no doubt that the hardware has generated a huge amount of press, from HoloLens to Book. Pro 4 generated some press. Most people, of course, are more interested in the bright, shiny new products. But Pro 4, for me, is the real winner. It's the one that we'll do the most volume on. It's the one that I think is the best experience right now, and it'll get better and better and better. So for me, the hardware is secondary to Windows 10, but it's incredibly important to the Windows 10 story as well. So we'd say that, you know, those were pretty big milestones. You'd be amazed at how many college kids talk about the hardware when we're recruiting on campuses. The big thing that's changed in the last, I don't know, year and a half, is college kids talk about Satya to us, and they talk about HoloLens. And it's just become this, you know, incredibly interesting recruiting motion for us. So for me, those would be a couple of the highlights that you spend a lot of time on the show talking about. Xbox, I think, would be a highlight in a bunch of ways too. You know, the two that you spend less time talking about, that I think the SLT, the senior leadership team, would say are just incredibly important to us. Mary Jo just mentioned both of them. Office 365 and the transition to the cloud is something you guys sort of take for granted almost, because you use it, you see that it's going to happen. But, you know, the fact that really is happening is something that a lot of analysts said we'd never successfully do. And gosh, that's just, we're thrilled that, you know, roughly 50% of our consumers are choosing to buy Office 365. You know, we're 18 million or more Office consumers are paying for the subscription service. You know, those are amazing numbers. Netflix is probably at 40 million, 45 million. So for a productivity suite to be at 18 in only a couple of years, we're thrilled with that. But then the enterprise adoption of Office 365 has just been amazing. And so we're pretty excited about Office transitioning to the cloud. The one you guys spend the least time talking about on the show, if there's one thing I would say.
Oh, wait a minute. SLT. Let's guess. It's going to be the Kinect. No.
No,
this
Leo.
This is a tough conversation because I feel like I should be taking notes. But
yeah. Write it down.
It's funny, as I'm out there walking my little dog, I'm always thinking, wow, the SLT time allocation versus the Mary Jo and Paul and Leo allocation, the place that it's most skewed is Azure, the Azure, you know, cloud platform. And I understand
it's
why.
It's hard to talk about the cloud. But it's also hard to talk about the cloud. That's so abstract, right?
It is. And it's for developers and IT people. So it's not something, you know, no one in my family knows what Azure is, and that's okay. But from a, you know, all things Microsoft, this really was the year that Azure became number two in what we think is going to be a two-horse race with Amazon, with AWS. And we were just thrilled at our last quarterly earnings, where a lot of the press started writing about how the cloud is actually lives in Seattle, and it's Amazon and it's Microsoft, not the consumer, you know, ad-funded cloud, but the business cloud. And for us and for the future of our company, you know, that's just unbelievably important. So again, in all three of those areas, lots of mistakes, lots of bumps along the way. I'm sure you're going to want to talk about some of them, which is totally fine with me. But overall, those three things, I think, would be the ones that we would point to as important things. The fourth one that you may not see as much is really the culture and the cultural change that Satya has brought about the company. And you guys have gotten some exposure to him. You've seen him out of events. You've seen how we've tried to change the staging and, you know, make sure we look like a different company in our marketing. But most importantly, just are we authentic to who Satya is? And I don't think you can see that as much in the products we ship or, you know, how we show up every week. But if you were in the halls of the company each week, I think the cultural difference is really stark. And we got a long way to go. But that would be the fourth thing, is I think he's established a new culture that most employees seem to be really eager to try to live, and that part's really fun as a longtime Microsoft person.
I love, you know, you just said, again, I feel like I should be taking notes and now writing a story, but you just said something that I found incredibly
Frank is freaking out.
No, here's the good news. We are recording this, Paul. So.
Yes, I know. Okay. I might actually have to watch an episode for a change. No, you drew a differentiation, which I really liked, between what you called the ad-supported cloud services for consumers. And you didn't really say it this way, but let's just say the kind of paid or licensed cloud services that businesses consume. And I mean, this does sort of correspond to something that I wrote recently, but more to the point, I think that's and I never thought to make that differentiation. And do you see, so in other words, do you think that that part of it is essentially going to become a two-horse race, as you said, between you and Amazon?
I do. I think it's going to be hard for others to catch up. I mean, clearly Google has the capability. They certainly have the, you know, the IQ and the DNA if they wanted to go after it. But they've been, you know, so much of their revenue, 97% of their revenue is ad funded. And so it's hard for them to sort of get excited about a different model, I think. Whereas for us and for Amazon, that's something that's very natural to
you
us.
You've moved into it very naturally.
Yeah, we've been there on the enterprise side for many years, and moving it from a volume license to the cloud is a pretty natural thing. Now, you know, Oracle is going to talk about how much of their revenue is cloud-based, and I just don't I like our position and Amazon's position, frankly, for the business cloud. And I think the other players in the space are going to have a hard time with the scale that Amazon and Microsoft are operating at. And, you know, this is complicated stuff to make enterprises be able to trust your cloud and understand how you run a primary and a secondary data center and how you do data sovereignty and all this stuff that I think will be hard if you're not 1,000% committed. And that's why we think it's a two-horse race.
I love that. It's just a great differentiation. I like it.
Yeah. Definitely. I was going to say, it's interesting talking about business model stuff, because both Paul and I thought, I think I can speak for Paul on this, saying one of the talks that you gave this year that was a public talk that we thought was really interesting was Convergence Keynote. And it was interesting because you talked a lot about how Microsoft's business model is evolving, especially around freemium. And we were both really interested in that.
Yeah.
So I'm curious if you can talk a little kind of generically maybe about how you think that's going to evolve even further and kind of what to look for in 2016 on that.
Yeah, that was a speech that were like, there were like 50 people in the audience. It was not a big speech. It was not meant to be a news generating speech. And I essentially announced we were renaming Internet Explorer, which I didn't mean to do in that speech. And then I talked about a bunch of business model stuff.
That was you. Oh, that was fun. I remember that.
That's me. No one, believe me, set out to make any news during that speech. And I sure did. That was kind of one of those sort of on the negative side moments as opposed to the positive side moments. Typically, you want to plan those PR moments as opposed to just have them happening to you. But less so on the business model side. You know, that really was much more about the browser being renamed, and I sort of inadvertently disclosed that, which was fine. On the business model side, you know, this has just been a massive cultural shift for us, where you realize that the power in what tools people use is just switched way back to the influential end user inside of a company. And, you know, it's just if you're going to be successful in the cloud, you need to provide a cloud service that anyone can get started with. They can sign up in 30 seconds. They can be sort of blown away within the first 5 minutes, and then they start using the thing. And, you know, making the product free or some set of functionality free is a very important way to make that happen. But it has deep engineering implications too. I can make something free, but if the sign-up process requires a phone call to Microsoft or some procurement person to sign something, forget it. It's sort of over. So we've had to make the sign-up process in the first 5 minutes really, really smooth and easy. And then if you have these, you know, sales leaders or a marketing leader using this new cloud service for free, they can play around with it. They can sort of get really excited about it. And then hopefully you're smart about what you put behind a paywall so that they're going to run into some reasonable limitation with the free product. And then that'll lead to the procurement discussion. But you can get people to fall in love with your product by making an important set of functionality free. Power BI is probably the best example of this for us this past year, where you can go to powerbi.com, and the team had a goal of a small number of clicks to sign up. And then they had this 5 minutes to wow design goal of making that first 5 minutes with Power BI something that you'd just be blown away by. So making it super easy for you to connect to your Excel spreadsheets or your SharePoint lists or Salesforce or CRM and just immediately start visualizing your data. That was really key for us, that mental model. It's not just about the pricing. It's actually about the delight of the engineering work that happens in the first 5 minutes that makes the pricing actually work. Gamers do this super well. Casual gamers on, you know, the Google App Store or Apple's store, you know, that freemium model is just incredibly prevalent in the gaming world, and they make it pretty darn easy to get started. And so how do you bring that model to the enterprise world? You know, we're playing with all sorts of things like that. This is the year we made Office free on 10-inch and below screens. And we've had over 200 million, you know, Word, Excel, PowerPoint, and Outlook downloads on iOS and Android since making that move to a free, you know, essentially free apps if you're using a screen size that's 10 inches and below. That's another type of freemium. So there's, you know, there are many models of them. Skype is free for consumers, but then we charge for it for enterprise. There's not one simple model that works for all product types. So we're playing with lots of different types of freemium.
And Chris, you know that Twit is a nonprofit. So when we use Skype, no money exchanging.
I hope we've tried to have very good aggressive pricing for students, for teachers, and for nonprofits. And maybe you can give me feedback if we haven't gotten there.
Yeah, somewhere in there. Yeah. No, I do pay for it, and I'm really happy to pay for Office 365.
Thank you.
I love that. As you know, I love my Surface Book. It's just phenomenal. I have a Dell too, just to make sure the OEMs are happy. So
great.
I'm very happy. Yeah.
We have some beautiful hardware, you know, from our OEM partners too. That's coming out this fall. The Dell XPS 13, I just think is a beautiful piece of work. Yeah. I love the Yoga. I know it's not everybody's favorite machine, but I think the Yoga is really a fun machine that my wife actually uses, and so we have it kicking around here in the house. I think it's behind you. just really casually placed there, Paul. You know, it just
No, I like the presentation's nice.
You're at home, Chris.
I didn't plan any of these.
You're doing this from your house? Oh, man.
Yeah,
now I really
attic.
Feel guilty.
One of my daughters is going to come running in here in a second
awesome.
And ruin everything.
This is your Christmas break and you're working.
Yeah. All right. You know the best? Here's the product we totally underestimated. This is the one where, oh, gosh, if I could have built like 10 times the number I built, I
really?
Would have.
Interesting.
This is the Elite Controller.
It's
we got some feedback.
It's really expensive.
Yeah. Why would anyone buy this thing? But it's the most, yeah, everybody wants it.
Gamers.
And
we got
that feedback at E3 that it was awesome, but maybe the price was a little too high. And so that influenced how many we produced. And on the Monday and Tuesday before Thanksgiving, myself and Kevin Turner, our COO, and the guy who runs our stores, David Porter, we go around and visit like 30 or 40 different stores, you know, Best right. Buy and GameStop and AT&T and Verizon and Microsoft stores, just to kind of see how things look. And the one thing we heard from everybody was you needed to make way more of these controllers. So yeah. That's a beautiful product.
It's sold out everywhere. Although I will say last week when we did that show from the Microsoft store in New York, they actually had some in stock in the store.
Yes.
I was going to buy one. And I got ushered out of there so quickly. I was actually two blocks away in the back of a guy on a petabike before I was like, damn, I forgot to buy the controller. But
yes. No, it is in stock some places, but I think we missed a few sales by running out in various locations. Would have never guessed it. $150, you know, controller. You can get an Xbox One, the Xbox 360 for not much more.
For the same price, exactly.
Yeah, but gamers, you know, they want every edge they can get. And that's the
totally.
And it really is that good. I think that's the thing. Once you feel that thing in your hand and the sheer kind of metal quality of it, you realize how awesome it really is.
Yeah. No, it's a beautiful piece of work. And I think it's a lesson for us in often we undervalue the accessories and we focus so much on the pro or the book or the console. And we forget that there's real delight in the mouse and the keyboard and the, you know, the controller.
I mean, you buy the box once, but then the controller, I mean, could be something that really extends the life of it.
Totally right. Totally right. In fact, when we came out with Surface Pro 4, we were out. And so I went to a bunch of stores trying to buy one. And instead, what I got was the Surface Pro 4 keyboard, you know, the black keyboard with the fingerprint reader. And I added it to my Surface Pro 3, upgraded it to Windows 10. And I was, you know, I was actually, I was very surprised how fresh.
You should have used the tagline, it's like getting a new computer in your computer.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly right. And Windows Hello, you know, Windows Hello worked with the fingerprint reader.
Yep.
It's tided me over until we filled the channel with Surface Pro 4.
Right.
All right. You want me to ask about GWX? You guys probably don't want to ask about that. So I'll take the hit on this. And I get a lot of calls on the radio show about this. Microsoft saying, you know, hey, my Windows keeps saying, download and install Windows 11. Download and install Windows 11. And now the latest thing is it says, would you like Windows 11 now or
10,
tonight?
Windows 10, Leo. Windows 10.
10. There's no
Oh, 11. My gosh. I thought we had some really
sorry, I didn't mean to scare you.
I didn't know about
no, 10, 10. I'm why like, did I say 11? I don't know why.
Chris Capicella has announced Windows 11 on the Windows Weekly podcast.
I haven't even signed off on that name. What are we talking about?
No, there's no 11. There's no – pay no – these aren't – this isn't the Windows you're looking for.
Exactly.
No, let's rewind that. But I do get calls from a lot of people who say, you know, it's bugging me, and the latest one doesn't even say can't. You know, there's an X, but if you just look at the buttons, it says, "Would you like Windows 10 now or tonight?" I understand,
your
and
choice.
You've heard us.
So Leo,
no choice.
They are giving you a choice. What's the
your
problem?
Choice? Any color as long as it's black.
And I understand there's a huge incentive for you guys, but for us as users to make everybody on the same platform. Developers will then flock to the platform. I completely understand why. But I also I got three calls on the radio show this weekend. People say, can I stay with Windows 7? I said, yes, you can.
Yeah.
So what's the
story? At your own risk, at your own peril.
Well,
yes,
they're being annoyed at this point, right, a little bit.
No, for sure. Yeah. And, you know, this is definitely something that as we've moved Windows to a service, we're trying to find the right balance. You know, look, we made Windows 10 for free for anybody who had a Windows 8 or Windows 7 machine. And that was, again, you could call that freemium if you want. But that was a decision. You know, we didn't take that decision lightly. For us, it's just so incredibly important to try to end the fragmentation foundation of the Windows install base. And so we think every machine that's capable of running Windows 10, we should be doing everything we, you know, possibly can to get people to move to Windows 10. We always want to give them the choice, and we're trying to find the right UI constructs. We're trying to find the right update constructs that we think are going to, you know, please as many people as possible. But we do worry when people are running an operating system that's 10 years old, that the next printer they buy isn't going to work well, or they buy a new game. They buy Fallout 4, a very popular game, and it doesn't work on a bunch of older machines. And so as we're pushing our ISV partners and our hardware partners to build great new stuff that takes advantage of Windows 10, that obviously makes the old stuff really bad, and not to mention viruses and security problems. So we really are trying to push people to get to Windows 10. Now, the good thing about Windows is that lots and lots of people care, and you get constant feedback. You know, we're willing to put up with some level of discomfort if we feel like we're getting more and more people to a safer, better operating system that's frankly better for everyone in the ecosystem. It's better for Intel, it's better for Dell, HP, it's better for our customers. But there's no doubt we're trying to find the right balance. There's no doubt, you know, if we could start it all over, we would have done a couple of things differently, I think. The reality is, with most modern devices, people just take it for granted that the device is going to constantly be updated, whether it's your iPhone or your Android tablet or what have you. People are very, very comfortable with that notion. Xbox One owners are very comfortable with that notion that it's just going to stay up to date. PCs, because of the history and the legacy, it's slightly uncomfortable for more people. And so we're going to keep at it. We're going to try to find that right balance. But we just know there's a lot of people out there who will constantly kick the can down the street without a little bit more of a, frankly, a push. And so, you know, there's no doubt with a base as big as ours, it's hard to move anyone to a new model without angering some people. We don't want to anger anybody, but we do feel a responsibility to get people to a much better place. And we think Windows 10, you know, it is a much better place than Windows 7. We'll always give you a way out, but we're trying to find the right balance.
Fair enough. Yeah. Fair enough. Yeah. And I know you've heard this, so I'm not telling you anything you haven't heard.
We spent a lot of time on it. You know, we look at the UI together as an SLT. We literally put the screens up and wallow in them. And, you know, the last thing that designers want is 14 senior leadership team members, you know, tweaking a word or moving a circle. Right. And that, you know, but Satya wants to see it. And so we look at it together. But we don't always get it right, for sure. Frankly, if we had zero bugs and zero other
you
mistakes,
wouldn't be trying anything.
I'll take the problems of, hey, you're pushing too hard. Right. We've got them.
What about, I'm going to take the hit for Paul and Mary Jo. What about the privacy concerns people have expressed? And, you know, one of our hosts, if you listen to the show, you know that Steve Gibson really will not go to, of course, he's still using Windows XP, so he's just a cuckoo. But he doesn't want Windows 10 to talk to the home office. And he feels that there's no way not to do that. I disagree with him, but I want to give you a chance to respond to it.
Well, you absolutely are in control of your own data, for sure. No doubt about it. And that's core to every privacy statement we've made. I mean, the customer owns their data. You get to control what happens to your data. With Cortana, who gets smarter and smarter about you, there's a notebook that stores all of your likes and dislikes, and you can stop it. You can empty it. You don't have to use Cortana. So, you know, I think Apple and Microsoft have both been incredibly clear that the consumer or the customer owns their own data. Now, there is telemetry on how your machine is performing that we do collect with Windows 10. You know, is the thing crashing? What kind of antivirus programs are running? How long does it take to boot? How long does it take to go to sleep? You know, are there viruses on the machine? So we feel a responsibility to keep that system as high performing as possible. And there is that aspect of Windows 10, but it has nothing to do with your personal data. That's completely in your own control. And so, you know, it's I think the notion of privacy with high tech is unbelievably important. And I think, you know, the companies who have gotten this and who've understood this have come out very loud and clear in the last year on what their privacy policy is and what their you know, what their business model is. We don't scan your email to serve you ads. That's incredibly clear. We've stated that multiple times. We'll continue to state that. That's something that's really, really important to us. You saw Tim Cook on 60 Minutes talking about encryption and why encryption's important to sort of Apple's privacy policy. These are good things that Apple and Microsoft are coming out and being very clear on their stance on privacy. I think consumers need to hear it, but businesses, believe it or not, they need to hear it too. They want to know as much as anybody, you know, how this data is flowing around the world. At what points would you turn data over to a government? All of these things are very important. They're not going away. It's not like you can say, oh, just stop doing it. That's crazy. We have to keep your system stable. We have to, you know, patch Defender with new signatures so that we'll stop your machine from getting infected. That's just the reality of the world. And yet we think we also have to be really clear on what our policies are, what our deep beliefs are. And our number one belief is you own your own data. Flat. That's it. End of story.
And I really want to be fair and thank Microsoft for fighting the good fight for privacy, for fighting to protect people's identity, for the transparency you have in your reports. I think those are all very valuable things. Yep. Yeah,
we'll keep at it. I mean, it's not simple.
One of the biggest stories this year, I think, was the way that privacy advocates are well-meaning, most likely, went after Windows 10 for misunderstanding what was going on there. And you kind of evaluate what Microsoft does with privacy in Windows 10. And to me, it's exactly as you just described it. I don't see the issue. Cortana in particular, even when you do an express setup, you still have to manually go through an okay Cortana before that happens.
For sure. And so that opt-in is important. But, you know, there are lessons learned for us too, obviously. The way we communicate things, that's a big part of my job, frankly. You want to talk about the OneDrive mistakes, or we've had plenty of them this year. Some of them are obviously rooted in technical issues we're trying to solve. Some of them are just plain communications mistakes that we made and didn't do a good enough job, you know, talking about it early enough and frequently enough. And, you know, that's always room for improvement there. If you just wallow in all your mistakes, the surface area is just so incredibly large.
Let's wallow in mistakes for a few minutes, shall we?
Believe me, we do. But you also obviously have to move forward and get on to the next one. I think last week or 2 weeks ago, Paul, you said, I hope you guys are done apologizing for OneDrive. It's time to move on.
Yeah. And I did say that to the folks from OneDrive. I think you've apologized enough. let's move forward.
Totally. Yeah.
Okay, I have one I want to throw out there. Give me something to hope for in the new year as a Windows Phone fan, Chris.
Yeah.
Because I'm abandoning hope. This year, I actually even toyed with the idea of going Apple. And you know what? For me, that's the rock bottom right there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Jeez.
I hear you.
That's the closing the bar moment.
I just spit up my coffee. Oh my God.
Yeah. So, a couple of things I would say. Number one, you guys have done, a very good job sort of sussing this out and talking about it on the show. We're clearly very cognizant of our position in the phone world. And frankly, we've done the hard yards to retrench and have an approach that in this coming year is very much about trying to satisfy our fans and trying to have a great success in the business world for businesses who want to buy phones for their employees. I've played around with the 650 and the 950. They're both very, very good phones. I think Windows 10 is much nicer on the 950, which is my main phone, than I was experiencing with, the 840 and Windows 8. So the experience is getting better and better and better. You hopefully start to see some of the app work, starting to pay off. This week, we've just announced a bunch of apps. You talked to Steve Guggenheimer, and you can check out his post with Netflix and Uber and a bunch of other apps. The more we get a big install base for Windows 10, the better off our phone is. Just today, the Beatles' 17 albums are now available on almost every streaming service, including Groove Music. So now on my Windows phone, when I'm not listening to podcasts of you guys, I can be listening to 17 albums and buy
them
on my phone.
It's a tough call which one you want to listen to.
Totally. Well, you'd be surprised. There's a role for both. The dulcet tones of Mary Joe and Paul, they have a role in my world. But you know, being able to just on your phone go buy one of those 17 albums, you know, that's a great capability that we're bringing to all our devices. That's available on Xbox. That's available on your Surface devices, your Windows devices from third parties, and of course your phone. Now, I think we have to do more breakthrough work. The work we've done with the 950, the 650, it's solid. The camera's fantastic. It's a wonderful, you know, there's some wonderful capabilities there. But to really do something that I think would allow me to compete for a, you know, 15-year-old's dollars on a phone and ask them to move from an iPhone to one of our phones, you know, I think we need more breakthrough work. We need more breakthrough hardware work. We need more breakthrough experiences. You can see Continuum as an interesting idea.
Snapchat, let's face it. That's all you really need if you want a 15-year-old.
You need Snapchat. You need Instagram, of course, which we were lacking for a while. Yeah. You need Uber. Gotta have it. Gotta, you know, it's just there's 10, 15 that you just have to have on the phone. But I also think, you know, with Surface, we had a bunch of early misfires, but that notion of a tablet that could replace your laptop, that notion of saying, hey, Apple wants to sell you an iPad and they want to sell you a Mac, we think there's one device that exploits the seam between those two devices. We need some sort of spiritual equivalent on the phone side that doesn't just feel like it's a phone for people who love Windows. It's got to be a phone that's sort of like, wow, that's a real shocker, or that's a real breakthrough, and that's going to make me pause before I buy my 17th iPhone. And you know, we need time to actually go build that.
What about what about the new carrier paradigm?
Oh, I love this one. I was hoping you'd ask me about this one.
Actually, the chat room brought
Let me read from a prepared statement.
Go for it.
Well, and I think you know what I'm talking about.
Well, there's two.
The new relationship between Microsoft carriers and updates.
Yeah. So, you know, gosh, we're so pleased to have Windows as a service. I can't say it enough. You know, I got an update on my 950. I bought it, whatever, the Tuesday before Thanksgiving when I was on that fun retail tour with Kevin and David. I bought a 950, and you know, when it came with Windows 10, and then 3 weeks later or something, there was an update, and it, you know, in my case, it worked. I know that wasn't the case in everybody's situation, but that was it. It didn't, you know, AT&T didn't have to go through their technical assurance 10-week process, and T-Mobile didn't have to
why
happen.
Is it literally just came down. What changed? I mean, how did that happen? Do you know?
Well, for us, the core was just, you know, essentially catching up to the model that is the modern model, where if you have a core OS that's on the device, that's just something that the company who makes that OS has the responsibility to keep up to date, to keep safe. And so, you know, we're thrilled to be in that model where we can update Windows 10 just direct to the consumer. And it's just the, you know, frankly, it's just the better model. It doesn't take you 15 weeks when we're done with the code to get it out to your customers. And, you know, we're really thrilled to have reached that point. We'll get better and better ourselves at releasing these updates, so we don't have to pull them back and fix a bug we missed and then push it out again. But the fact that we could just do that straight to the consumer, it's such a better world to be in. And we're thrilled to finally be there with Windows 10.
We're talking to Chris Capicella. He's the chief marketing officer from Microsoft, and he's taking time off from his time off to work. So thank you.
It's my pleasure. My family went out to like a museum, which I actually wasn't that thrilled to be doing, so I had a great excuse.
Does Microsoft shut down? Many companies I know shut down around this time of year. Do you send everybody home around this time of year? Or?
Yeah, we have vacation. You know, we have a bunch of vacation days. There are the diehards who go to work still. Like the buildings, you can physically access them. They're not closed. But there are vacation days that, you know, most people take.
Right.
A lot of people work from home. You know, we get great connectivity to everything you need. But it gets pretty quiet. You know, mail goes down to a trickle, which is really nice. But physical access to the buildings is totally available for employees who, you know, forget something in their office or want to go do something.
Yeah, it's people doing security research. I mean, there's some stuff that's never
so there aren't like coyotes roaming the halls.
Oh, nice. Not to my knowledge. You know, one of the big things for us, of course, is December 26th, in the morning of December 25th. The Xbox team is particularly hard at work on that day. The number of consoles that get turned on that then get connected. And this year, the number of Windows 10 PCs that will start streaming Xbox games will be totally unprecedented. The last 2 years, there's been a lot of attacks on Sony's network and our network. And so we actually have a lot of people who unfortunately are working on those mornings to try to make sure the Xbox network, the Xbox Live network is up and running. And so that is a, you know, that is a reality of the business we're in.
You guys, anything else, or do you want to? I mean, Chris has been so generous with his time. I don't want to. The family's going to be home soon.
You guys are going to have to kick me off.
He wants to play a little Call of Duty before the kids get back.
Laura Croft, actually. I started playing
that
Laura
new
Croft.
One, new nice. Tomb Raider, yeah.
Last night. It's fun. It's really fun. But Ori is still Ori in the Blind Forest. Even though it's not new, I can't stop playing that game.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. I downloaded about 4 new games for the holidays and realized I'm not going to be home.
So, that's tough.
But I have a nice 3 terabyte drive on my Xbox One. So
wow, okay. Very nice.
Yes, thank you for making that easy. Yeah. Okay, Mary Jo wants to know.
I want to know, when is the 650 going to come out?
I thought she was going to ask when I can get a 950 on Verizon, Mary Jo. I really was sure. I was really positive.
You know what, Leo? I've given up.
I'm just going to badger him about phone.
I've given that up.
I know Chris has nothing to do with that and can't force anything to. Yeah. But sure.
Yeah, I don't think we have a date yet announced on that one. The phone team would probably say, no, we've already announced it, and here's the exact date. But I don't think we actually do have that out as a published date yet. So stay tuned for more on that front.
Okay.
Yeah. Sorry.
No, I didn't ask about Verizon because I'm kind of giving up hope. Or maybe I should just ask you, like, should I give up hope that Verizon is going to
there you go.
Be a carrier for you
it's
guys?
It's a false god, Mary Jo.
I know.
Well, I would certainly never give up hope on someone as important as Verizon. You know, obviously just a huge American telco. The telcos themselves, typically in every country, there's one or two that are just unbelievably powerful. And so if you want to be a player in the phone business, you know, at some point you're going to have to do the work. Verizon's been a really tough one for us historically, as Paul has talked about pretty articulately on the show before. You know, they've got some tech that is very specific to Verizon's network that is, you know, no one really wants to hear any of this sob story from our perspective, but it does take a lot of extra engineering work on our part to make our stuff work on Verizon's sort of unique, I'll call it, network. Whereas when we do work for AT&T, it actually helps with a bunch of other, you know, operators. And so Verizon's always what I'd call sort of an expensive piece of work for us to do. And then historically, we just have not done well together. We haven't delivered for them in many cases, and they have not delivered for us in many cases. And both sides would be the first to say that because we've said it to each other. And whether it's, you know, walking into an AT&T store and having a pretty good experience compared to, you know, a different store, or whether it's the work we've done to deliver on time, we've frankly done a better job with AT&T delivering our part of the bargain on time and consistently than we have with Verizon. So unfortunately, that we've had a very, very checkered execution with them. And so for now, as we're sort of retrenching, you know, we've obviously made that hard decision. But everyone's telling both of us, hey, please don't let this go. Please keep at this. Please figure out a way to make it work. Satya's constantly asking me about it as well. And so it's not something we take lightly. As we finish the retrenchment and start to bring exciting new things to market, we'll of course want to be in as many places as you possibly can. But we made the tough call in the near term to pick the partners that we think we can do the best work with. And that's, you know, that's really been AT&T.
I'm on
Bummer.
AT&T.
Sorry, so Mary Jo. I know, Paul. Look, Mary Jo, I hope you know we're listening. For a long time, you said I have no store in Manhattan. And then I delivered this unbelievably beautiful store in Manhattan for you. And you said, I wish they'd make a laptop. And so we went and made the Surface Book.
You don't have a store in Dedham, Chris.
Yeah.
There's no Dedham store.
Apparently.
We even called it the ultimate laptop. We made the line the ultimate laptop for you because you're like, I want an ultimate laptop. So we're listening. Keep
you have power, Mary Jo. You have the power.
Mary Jo, ask him for a Dedham store.
Dedham's never going to happen, Paul. It's never going to happen. The Prudential Center is so close to Dedham.
Oh, there
Not really. That hurts. Okay. But the Prudential store is one of a kind. There's no other store that has that sort of thin, long.
Yeah, it is. It is very unique in the Microsoft store realm. You mean? Yeah.
It is. That's true. That's the store my mom goes to all the time. And she keeps saying, do they know I'm your mom or is it just always this nice?
Did she come to the opening? I know you were there at the opening.
I was at the opening. You know, she wasn't able to make it. My family didn't quite understand like what a big deal that was because we unveiled the new Microsoft brand. And
that's right.
Like, that was a big piece of work for me personally. Like, I invested years of my life in that new brand. And I kind of told my family and they were like, oh, yeah, maybe we'll make it. And they weren't actually able to make it. And then afterwards, when the press like went bananas on the brand, they were like, oh, my gosh, we should have been there. I'm like, well, next time we redo the brand, you can show up
for the Dedham store.
Yeah, to the Dedham store.
Chris, is your background in marketing? Is it in business? Is it?
I grew up in Boston, you know, in Paul's sort of homeland. And my parents opened a small Italian restaurant when they were really young. And I worked at that restaurant all the way through college. Wow. And in college, I went to college in my hometown and studied computer science and economics and then got a job right out of college at Microsoft and, you know, left Boston. So I'm sort of this freak. I've really only had two jobs, the Boston family restaurant and then Microsoft. Wow. And I would have never guessed, you know, I would have never guessed that it would last this long. But it's been a hell of a ride with Bill and Steve and now Satya.
No kidding. Yeah. 20, did you say 26 years?
It'll be 25 July 1, but who's counting?
Wow. That is a lifetime. That's exciting.
Yeah, and your average CMO only lasts like 18 months, and I'm at like 18 months right now. So, you know, I got to keep working hard to make sure I hit the 25-year mark.
I am anything else, you guys? Come on, we got to keep him busy. We got Chris Capicella here.
I guess we don't have to badger him.
Remember, this is the trade-off, so he didn't have to go to the museum, okay?
That's true. Exactly. That's true. You do owe us. No, I mean, I when I look back at this year and I think about all the stuff that's changed, I mean, I think Microsoft has a better public persona today than they did even a year ago. And obviously, part of it's just the kind of halo effect around Satya Nadella, but, you know, what changed this year? I mean, it really does seem like it can't just be Windows 10, you know. It seems like the public perception of Microsoft has gotten positive again in a very notable way this year. I mean,
in the last 18 months, that's the amazing thing. Yeah.
It's incredible.
It really is. It is different.
No, for sure, and we certainly feel it. You know, for the first time in many years, I think the vibe inside the company matches the vibe outside the company. And that's sort of the perfect position to be in. You know, you want the way your employees are feeling to be the same of the way your customers or, you know, maybe the average consumer is feeling. And I don't think it's a single thing. I do think Satya's sensibility and Satya's authenticity and he's very gracious and graceful and that comes across. It comes across in his speeches. It comes across in his interviews. It comes across in the way he makes mistakes and then takes responsibility for them. It's coming across in our marketing. You know, we've really landed on this notion of empowerment as the brand essence for the company. And if Apple stands for cool and Google stands for search and Facebook stands for sharing, you know, Microsoft stands for empowerment. It's all about, you know, empowering you guys to do your job, empowering you to have this broadcast using Skype or sharing notes using OneNote, even if we haven't gotten it just right yet. It's about the empowerment of what we enable other people to do. And our ads have started reflecting that, I think, in a bigger way. You know, we're really telling our customers customer stories more than we're talking about it ourselves. If you've noticed, if you've gone to our big events, you know, Satya will almost always have someone join him on stage to tell their story. The CEO of Real Madrid, the CEO of the Special Olympics, Russell Wilson from the Seahawks. You know, it doesn't have to be that British composer, David, I'm drawing a blank on his last name, who did that incredible app where you can compose music on your Surface, a staff pad. He joined Satya on stage. So
that was
so cool. We're cultivating these fans and then letting the fans tell their own stories. And I think it's making us a little bit more approachable, which Satya really is, incredibly approachable. And I think, you know, a lot of those things add up. Look, the products have to be there. None of this stuff matters if Windows 10 is bad or if, you know, HoloLens isn't exciting or Minecraft isn't, you know, continuing to do really well. So it's got to be built on incredible products. But I think the tone, you know, is really special. And Kathleen Hall is this woman who works for me. She runs a small advertising team. And she comes up with all kinds of great ideas. She came up with that idea for the holiday spot where the Microsoft Store employee, you know, walked from the Manhattan store down to the Apple store and sang, you know, Let There Be Peace on Earth. And, you know, that's sort of a great example of a totally different tone.
So
and
amazing.
I didn't ask Satya for permission for that. I didn't like have to go get buy-in. We just thought it was a great idea. We thought it could be really cheesy. So we had to go film it and figure out whether it could be beautiful and tasteful. And we had to ask Apple's permission, and they were incredibly gracious. The spot was originally going to end with us holding up surfaces and spelling something out like Happy Holidays or something. And Apple said, you know, hey, if you don't use the surfaces and you let our employees be part of it, I think, you know, we'd love to do it. And,
that's,
you know,
great.
We weren't even sure the surface thing was going to work out. So we were very happy to drop it. And the cool thing was the employees at the Apple store didn't even know that was going to happen.
Really?
You know, their headquarters people, we asked for permission from their
So
their
that was a genuine reaction when they come out and they see the...
Totally.
Oh, that's so
totally
neat.
Genuine, which is really cool. And, you know, filming on Fifth Avenue on November 16th, you know, at night, super hard. You know, you can't shut it down. We knew people were going to be filming it. We were worried it was going to leak. Only one person posted anything. We were very lucky. And then, you know, our biggest problem were those real Microsoft employees, like, or did you hire talent? In fact, we had put the call out to all Microsoft retail store employees to send us videos of them singing a carol, and we got over 80 videos from people all over the U.S. and we picked 30 of them and flew them to New York for the, you know, for the filming of the spot. They didn't even know they were going to go serenade Apple employees until, you know, halfway through the rehearsal.
That's nice.
And it was sweet. It worked out. It worked out pretty well, I think. To have Apple employees now, you know, walk into, we've had a couple of cases where Apple retail store employees will walk a few blocks to a Microsoft store and ask to talk to the manager and then tell the manager, wow, you must be so proud to work for Microsoft. And that, you know, like that just blows our mind, you know, to have an Apple person say, gosh, you work for a great company. How cool is that, that you guys did that spot?
But that's a measure of the change, cool. You know, I mean, that really is a measure of how things have changed in the
last
year.
And when I heard that, I said, well, did you offer them jobs? They hadn't thought
like
of
someone
that
jumping over the Berlin Wall, you know.
It's crazy.
You kind of touched on HoloLens. I'm really excited about augmented reality. I think that was a good bet for Microsoft. We've been a little critical, though, and I'd love to give you a chance to respond about the field of view issue. I mean, I understand why you show a wide open room.
Yeah. I mean, to be clear, the issue isn't that the field of view exists. The issue is that the public demonstrations show this side view where that's not what it looks like.
Yeah.
You know.
Yes. No, you've been and other press people have actually been very articulate on this point as well. Demoing this stuff is super complicated. You know, setting up a demo, you know, if you think doing like a Skype demo like I did at Convergence Barcelona is complicated. Like figuring out a way to show the audience what the holograms look like is hard and expensive and technically complicated. And so Alex and the team came up with that rig, you know, that we put on the camera so that you could see those holograms overlaid on the desks or on the chairs or coming out of the refrigerator or, you know, all those demos you've seen. And the thing we've been tracking is just when somebody tries this thing on, how much do they focus on that field of view being a a showstopper. You know, when they play Minecraft or when they use Skype, how much do they take it off and say, God, the field of view is really bugging me? And the reality is that for most people, you know, that first experience, those first few experiences are just awesome. And nobody's saying like that field of view is a huge deal for them. So we're looking at, look, how do we demo this thing on stage? And are we being misleading? That's really the problem. If we feel like we are misleading customers, that's just unacceptable. We won't do that. We are looking at alternative ways to demo this stuff to address the issue itself. Keep in mind the HoloLens that we'll deliver in the early next year, early 2016, I'm looking at my clock, is a dev kit, $3,000. It's for developers. So I don't think many consumers, you know, are going to go out and buy this and feel like, hey, you know, yes, you misled me with that Minecraft demo. But, you know, you guys have been loud enough and consistent enough on this that we are looking at different ways of doing these demos. I think not everybody has an appreciation for just how complicated it is to pull this stuff off with such early tech. And, you know, it's why we don't have these HoloLens demos all over the place. Doing them in the flagship store, which we've now started to do again, where you can go up to the fifth floor and have these HoloLens experiences in Manhattan. You can schedule it online. You can go check it out. Mm-hmm. It's like very human resource expensive for us. It's not something that we just have a super easy way to duplicate. And so that's
it's
the
not
balance.
Someone on the it's not someone on the store floor holding a HoloLens.
Yeah, here, have your HoloLens. Put that on there.
No, it's guys. It's people from the HoloLens engineering team, you know, being in Manhattan. And that means they're not working with NASA or they're not working with, you know, the people who do education textbooks to reimagine how those textbooks should come across in a HoloLens experience. So we're struggling with the scale, frankly, and that's another example of, you know, coming up with a different way to demo it means we're taking somebody off the many other things they could be doing, and it's a tough debate internally.
And I would venture that in the normal course of events, this would still be a secret project, and that this is early days on the HoloLens, and I think the desire to show where you were and what you're doing and get developers excited about it probably moves it ahead and makes it more public earlier than a lot of other projects would be public.
That's exactly right. You know, we talked a lot about, is this our iPhone type moment? Meaning you sort of surprise the world with something that's very complete and ready to go at scale. And given that this is a brand new platform, you know, this is a new PC, totally untethered, et cetera, et cetera. We felt like we had to build an ecosystem. And so we have to go with a slower rollout. And, you know, that great debate we had over that January moment that Mary Jo and Paul were at, do we do Windows 10 and HoloLens together in one moment, or will one overshadow the other? I can't tell you how much time we spent. And now in hindsight, you know, I think it was perfect. It turned out perfectly. In fact, if anything, HoloLens has gotten much bigger than we intended. It's become humongous without selling a single unit. And that's actually a problem. Like, we won Time Gadget of the Year.
Yeah.
And we were just like, my gosh, how crazy. Like, it's not an Apple that's product. Funny. It's not a Google product. It's not a Sonos, Tesla. It's a Microsoft piece of hardware. What? That's crazy. And then I'm thinking, and, you know, we haven't actually sold any or made that many, and we still are working through the issues. And so,
but it is a testament.
Nice problems to have.
It's a testament to how important, how great this product will be. And I can't wait. I'll be a first in line to get one. By the way,
we're excited.
I hope Panos Panay got a gold star on his Christmas paycheck for his amazing reveal of the Surface Book Detach, because we all agreed that even the people in the room were just blown away by that. It was so well done.
The full credit on that reveal goes to Panos and Frank Shaw, who runs PR for Microsoft and is on my team. They were the ones, I think Panos sort of called Frank driving home after a rehearsal and said, hey, I'm playing around with this crazy idea. Maybe we show the video but we don't show the reveal and we take all the tech specs off and we just show the video. And then later we come back. And so he and Frank kind of, you know, battered around the ideas. And as soon as we saw it in rehearsal, I was like, oh my gosh, of course we're doing it this way. So Panos is not in the marketing team, but of course he's a great, great marketer, a great storyteller. And, you know, he would be the first to say, hey, I scored on that side. And there's a bunch of other things, you know, I get demerits on. And you got to have a balanced view of the world. You guys have talked about, you know, some of the hiccups we've had with Surface Book and Surface Pro 4 right out the shoot, getting that firmware updated. We're continuing to work on it. We're excited to get to the new year and get that next one out there. So it's not, nobody is perfect inside of the walls of Microsoft, and people are very, they really own it. They really own their mistakes, which is a total testament to Satya. It wasn't always that way.
Well, and it's a measure of the ambition of what Microsoft's up to these days. Of course, if you push harder, more things will break. But that that is part of being ambitious. I mean, this is your first PC hardware. This is, I mean, all of this is, you know, really exciting for me. I'm having watched Microsoft since the late 90s.
Yeah. I mean, I think the one thing people haven't written so much about is what you just touched on. Like, the fear is really gone and the ambition is really back. Now it's up to us to execute, but you know, this notion of being fearful or cautious, like the ambition inside the walls of the company is just crazy high. Now we have to go execute, but it's such a better place to be in than a culture that's kind of fearful and you know, very cautious about everything. And so, you know, let's go execute in 2016.
Yeah.
Well, we can tell you it's also a better company to cover, way more.
Much more exciting, isn't it? Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's good.
Yeah.
And we promise to do more Azure and Hadoop.
Well, you don't have to.
Well, let's maybe more Azure. Okay, I wouldn't go crazy.
No, it is called Windows Weekly.
Let's not jump the shark here.
Yeah. I get that it's called Windows Weekly.
No, but, you know, that's kind of accidental. It really could be Microsoft Weekly. I don't think we hesitate to cover every facet of your business. But that's part of the big shift of Microsoft from a desktop operating system and software company to a cloud company. That is the most difficult shift to navigate, because this is an older company in technology terms trying to reinvent itself. And that's an easy place to stumble.
Office as a as probably the world's biggest freemium service is crazy. The notion that Office, Microsoft's biggest business, essentially.
I'd love to be a fly on the wall in the discussion when somebody said, you know, what if we gave it away?
Yeah, that was me.
I have an idea.
I get the credit on that one.
Really?
The credit. Oh, for sure. I spent many years working in Office, so it's a business that's sort of near and dear to my heart. But it's you know, there's a lot to talk about. It's a big company. You guys do an incredible job covering so much of it, and you obviously have a lot of people who want to hear about the stuff you cover. So I think you got to find that right balance. But sometimes my heart goes out to Mary Jo when she's trying to bring up, like,
Laura's Azure is okay,
EMS or OMS.
Exactly. I'm trying to make it fun, making Hadoop fun.
Hey, listen, on January 6th, you could start a series that's like the Azure Service of the Week, and we would never cover everything by the end of the year. There's so much to it. It's so big.
Now the pipeline's insane. The amount of stuff we ship.
And I love seeing, speaking of that, Ray Ozzie and Taco, the Taco acquisition.
Yes.
There's just something kind of heartwarming about that.
Yeah. Well, the man's the king of communication, that's for sure. And so, you know, he obviously was a big contributor to Microsoft. And when he left, people were pretty sure he was going to go do something really interesting and special. And it's been very quiet. You know, they have been very low key about their work. So we're pretty excited about the opportunity to think about integrating it into, you know, mostly the Office and Skype sort of part of the company. And some of those people are just phenomenal engineers, too. So hopefully there'll be the added value there as well.
Someday I'd love to do a longer sit down with you, Chris, and talk about from the point of view of kind of an education for people interested in marketing, some of the big decisions. For instance, the decision that, my God, we're losing our shirts on an unlimited OneDrive. We've got to take this hit. And now I'm sure that's almost like a situation room kind of situation where you kind of, how are we going to handle this? And I'd love to hear.
Badly, as it turns out.
I didn't say it.
We agree.
Badly, as it turns out. Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, look, there was a bunch
Stop
of.
Stop apologizing, Chris.
I didn't apologize. That was a statement. That was an observation.
A fact. Okay. Okay.
You know, there are big business model decisions we made this year. Windows 10 free upgrade
Huge.
Was the biggest.
Huge.
Office freemium. You know, these are gargantuan. These are company changing decisions. OneDrive take back is a. Easy, you know, is a way to anger a bunch of diehard fans, particularly in the way we did it. And in that case, if anyone had seen the math, I don't think they would have questioned the actual economics. Why did we put ourselves in that place in the first place? That was another mistake that we had made, you know, sort of a year earlier. But you guys have covered, again, you guys have covered it super well. The economics were totally unsustainable. The way we did the communications was very rushed because of a major publication that was going to print something that was very damaging. Yeah. And was not true. And so we felt like we had to get in front of it, and we just weren't ready. Right. And we had given ourselves a couple more months to get everything lined up, to do it all in one fell swoop, OneDrive for business, OneDrive for consumer, how we grandfather people, blah, blah, blah. And we just were not ready. But the alternative of having a very damaging, borderline false story run in a massive publication, you know, was just, Frank and I just couldn't let that happen. And we just didn't do a good enough job in the sprint to beat the story, to get the communications in the shape that they needed to be. And so the economic decision was easy. We made the economic decision incorrectly a year earlier. And then when we saw the usage just take off and you have 400 million or whatever it is, and you're upgrading gazillion Windows 10 machines and they're all using OneDrive, which is great, but you've got to use it in a way that's economically sustainable. It was really, those are some of the things that went into it.
I have to say, often people ask, why don't you do more C-level executives on any of our shows on triangulation and so forth? And I always say, because you'll never get anything good out of them, because they're too good at, they know how to spin the story, how to handle the questions without, you know, they're politicians in some ways. And I have never met a CMO who is so forthright and candid.
Yep.
And I thank you so much, Chris. For giving
us
your time today. And
it's my pleasure. I must not feel like the I don't think I am a C-level executive.
Maybe
my
that's wife it.
my wife keeps telling me every time I get some new job, she's like, when are they going to figure out you're just a waiter in a mediocre Italian restaurant? Like, I don't get it. How do you get them to do these things? I'm like, I don't know.
Do your parents still own a restaurant?
You know, we don't own it anymore. After 46 years, my dad finally, you know, retired. And it certainly was not a mediocre Italian restaurant. It was a wonderful place.
Great.
It was wonderful.
What was it called?
It was called Dom's. My dad's name is Dom, or Dominic.
And it was in Boston?
Yeah, it was in Boston, right in the Italian section, the north end of Boston. Great place to grow up. You know, that's where we grew up. We ran around the restaurant as kids. That's, you know, kind of that. Like I said, those were the only jobs we kind of had until we left college. It was a great, really a special place.
Well, I'm sorry I never got there.
Yeah.
You give me a hankering for maybe a little.
There's great Italian food in Boston, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Yep. Yes.
Red check tablecloth.
Absolutely true.
Yeah.
All right. What a great interview. Chris Capicella, thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thanks. Nice to see you all. Keep up the great work. Yeah. I'll be listening, and I know you'll keep giving us the feedback.
That's right. I forget that's happening. Thank you.
Well, now that we know you're listening, expect nothing but praise on this show.
Yeah. Well, happy holidays. Merry Christmas, everyone.
Merry Christmas. Yeah, have a great new year, Chris Capicella. And we look forward to seeing what Microsoft brings us
bye-bye.
In 2016. Take care.
Bye, thanks.
Wow. That was amazing. Who scored that one, you guys?
Mary Jo.
Thank you, Mary Jo.
You know what? He suggested it. He has been on me for like months, literally. Can I get on Windows Weekly? And I'm like, yes, you can. We would love to have you.
You just
so finally it worked out.
A very nice Christmas gift, because that was
awesome. He's a great guy. And we, you know what? We brought him on knowing that he would not be the normal CMO kind of interview.
Yeah, because you've interviewed, of course, all three CEOs of Microsoft, and you're good at that. But it's always hard to get anything substantive out of these guys.
Yeah,
He said something very interesting about the OneDrive thing, and I we how do I say this? I don't want to give away any names or anything, but, you know, I had communicated with somebody pretty high up at Microsoft about the OneDrive stuff at the time that it happened. And it's interesting. You never really hear how classy people can be, but he sort of betrayed that in a way, if you will. It's kind of a bad word. But when he said, what he said was a very big publication mm-hmm. was going to write the story about OneDrive, and we had to get it out.
Wrong.
Right. That was the part he added. The person I talked to from Microsoft never told me that part of it. He never said anything about this publication getting it wrong. It would have been very easy to have kind of shat on that company because, frankly, they probably deserved it. You know, for getting the story wrong and going public. In other words, contacting Microsoft and saying, hey, we're going to go public with the story. Do you have any comment to make? And the comment was, yeah, we have a comment to make. You're wrong. And they were still going to go public with it. And no one told me that. Right? It would have
Which
been.
I think is classy, right?
That's what I mean. That's exactly
they
my point.
They didn't dump on this other publication, even though they must have wanted to.
But here's what makes it even more amazing. Microsoft communicated the OneDrive thing very poorly because it was rushed. And they could have excused that
right.
by saying, you know, we had to get, we were trying to get this thing right because we had to correct what they were saying, blah, blah, blah. And I think people would have kind of understood that. But instead of using that excuse, they've just kind of taken the hit on this, mm-hmm. you know? And that's classy, and that's mm-hmm. my point. Mm-hmm. In other words, just in talking to him briefly, he reveals this just a little bit of nuance to the story, and it makes them look all the more credible.
Yeah.
You know, and I that's the type of thing you don't hear about a lot.
No.
You know,
because they can't. I mean, they really can't. You know, they've got to maintain.
But it's nice. I mean, it says. I think it speaks to the people there making the decisions.
Yeah. Are you scared now, though? About because from now on, we're
always
know he's listening.
Yep. No, I don't like that. No, he's a good. You know, it depends on who it is, right? So
I knew. I knew Chris, he listened. I knew he did because he would. Right. Whenever we saw him, he'd bring up something on the show, and I'm like, he's listening to every episode.
Yeah. It's always a little weird to get your words thrown back at you. You know.
What do you want to do next? You want to go through?
I know we're like way over on time.
We're not gonna. There's no way we're getting through all this stuff. So
no, we're not.
Here's my recommendation. I think we need to talk about HoloLens.
Yes.
This just came up, but he alluded to the New York facility that they have at the flagship store where developers can come in and get a HoloLens experience. Mary Jo and I both did this last week, actually. And I did it on Wednesday. Yeah. I think Mary Jo might have done it. Actually, she did it Wednesday, too.
It was funny. We both did it the day that we did Windows Weekly Live in the store in New York, but we couldn't tell anybody.
Remember,
we had done it.
I asked Madden, Chris Madden?
Madden 2016, yeah.
I asked Madden 2016, what's on the fifth floor? And he said, oh, stuff.
Right, and I just said I was going to buy one of those controllers. Yeah. And I got the shepherd's crook. I got yanked out a side door, ushered up to the fifth floor, and then they dumped me back in an alley on when I was done. I couldn't even go through the front.
Sorry, you can't go back.
Yeah, and I didn't. Yeah. I was going to buy one of those controllers. I completely.
I wasn't going to buy one, but now I'm sold. By the way, that's how good Capicella is. I want a $150 controller.
For me, this is a hard thing. Mary Jo will love this description because she's so into gaming. But if you think about like the Xbox controller, like I have here, the height of these sticks is higher on the Xbox One than it was on the Xbox 360. And one of the things I like about the new controller is they have variable height, pieces that you can put in, so you can actually change that height. And to me, it's like the one problem with the Xbox One controller, and it's fixed by the Elite controller. And I can't wait to get this thing. I'm very excited.
So you both got to try the latest HoloLens on Wednesday last week.
Thoughts? I got some from the HoloLens guys.
I'm not surprised.
Oh, it's Therat. What are you gonna say this time?
We had a heart to heart. We had one of those kind of tough love conversations. We kind of did a little bit of it on the show here already, but I think the thing I would say is just that, the one thing that gets lost in the criticisms about the size of the field of view, and also in just the criticisms about how they're communicating it and they're showing it from the side, and maybe it's not exactly, what it's like to experience it in real life, because of course the HoloLens is this thing you stick over your head and it's a very singular experience. It's something you do by yourself. is the central technology behind OneLens, which is that there are these holograms that you see in, you sort of see superimposed over the real world. That's the augmented reality part of it. Is so good and is so well done that it you know, the other complaints almost don't sort of matter. We've talked about this a little bit, but, you know, if there's a hologram of a cup and it's sitting on a table or something more complex than that, it's a hole in the table, whatever it is. If you move around and you bob your head, you look up into it and you go under it and whatever, that thing never shimmers or moves. It never is off.
Hard to do, yeah.
It should be impossible. I don't know how they do it. That is what makes HoloLens amazing. That aspect of it is astonishing. And it fools your mind and your eyes into believing that this stuff is real. And I think that needs to be said up front, because that stuff's awesome. Now, you're looking at it through a little field of view, and that hasn't changed, but it's important to say.
Well, that's one of the reasons, right? Because if you had to update that on a giant 360-degree sphere, it would be a lot harder to do.
It may also introduce the queasiness elements that you get with VR.
That may be true.
The other thing they told me that seriously, 9, 10, 11 months into the game, whatever it is, someone from HoloLens finally tells me the thing, which frankly, they should have told us all in April when we did it the second time, which is this. The first time we did it, we had this giant tethered alien headset looking thing that was all, right, you know, prototype, whatever it was. And I guess the field, I don't remember this because, you know, it was a long time ago. We've had the HoloLens demo since then. But I guess the peripheral vision on that was blocked. And to what degree, I don't remember or know. But because of the encompassing nature of it, your peripheral vision, which you sort of take for granted, was constrained somewhat. And so when we go to the shipping hardware, the hardware we have now that we've had ever since April, the real thing, the untethered, whatever it is, you know, they're like old lady sunglasses. I don't know what they're called.
They're not cat-eye sunglasses.
I don't know what they're called.
Yeah, they're wrap
blockers, whatever.
Yeah.
When you're just wearing these things that are kind of big glasses, you have your peripheral vision. And so you can see up, down, around, you know, you can see down to the floor. That helps root you in real space. It's very important. You're not teetering over and all that kind of stuff. What they told me was this. The field of view has, in fact, not ever changed. It's just that once you open up the peripheral vision, the perception you have is that the field of view has gotten smaller. So I'm like, well, it's good to know, guys. But you knew that. I mean, why didn't you tell us that in April? And then after we complained, after everyone complained that the field of view had gotten smaller in April, why didn't you come back and say after that, this is why? You could have explained it. Like, why didn't you? They didn't tell us. I don't know. I can't, you know. Yeah. So I said, look, ultimately, it's your fault.
So what did you think, Mary Jo? What do you,
yeah.
You know?
So I hadn't watched it I didn't do the April demo. I did it in January when we first saw it. And we could see
everything.
Oh, you
never did it in April?
No. And so this was my second time. And so I got to say, I'm being the downer instead of Paul on this. I thought the field of view was horrible.
Much reduced from the first time, obviously.
Well, but see, you're having my April experience.
Right.
That's
right.
I am. Right.
And that's the issue. When you've done that initial one.
Yeah. I just was so surprised how small it was. I kept backing up and moving forward and backing up and moving forward and trying to get the thing right so that I could see the right amount. And the guy who was doing the demo with me, he's like, are you okay? Can you see? I'm like, I can't figure out where to stand where I can actually have a good experience. I'm either getting too close or too far. And now I feel like I'm just seeing such a small piece that I'm like, yeah.
By the way,
I was disappointed. April, I have to say.
I did the same thing. I took it off. The first time I had the thing on my head, I took it off. And the guy said, what's the matter? I said, this one doesn't work. I can only see a tiny, and he put it on and he said, no, this is fine. Yeah. And you know, it's very interesting that you had exactly the same reaction that I did.
Yeah. The other thing is I wore those glasses over my glasses, which you can do. But it made getting the headset adjusted correctly very difficult, and it kept resting on my glasses and really hurting my face and like feeling really heavy. Yeah. And they said they know that that is an issue for some people. They kept trying to adjust mine. But I'm like, okay, that's something else to like kind of know. And
I think those
headsets we tried, they're not the exact ones that are going to be out in January, but they were pretty close.
I think the thing I would say is what I said to Chris, which is this: they announced this earlier than you would normally.
Did
I think yep. right?
They did.
Yes, but
and so
I don't.
It's in. A
I don't
very
want to give them too much
stage.
Of a pass, though. But they've been. They've really. I think the side demonstrations of these things kind of exaggerates what things look like. I think it sets up a unrealistic expectation in people's minds. But seriously, those three demos that we went through that day in New York, I thought it was fantastic. And the game, you know, which we saw at the hardware event in October, you know, from a side view where aliens are popping out of the wall and he's shooting them at, you know, whatever. We played that game and I thought it was incredibly engaging. In fact, if I handed that to my son, we'd never see him again. He would be playing this in the cellar for the rest of his life. Like he would never stop doing this because in the same way that the holograms sitting on a table, or however you want to say it, are rooted in the real world and feel real, these holograms feel so real that when they fire something at you, you physically duck and move out of the way to prevent yourself from getting hit by something that's not really there. Like it's
That's neat.
Yeah,
it is astonishing. Yeah. Now, you know, to overcome the field of view issue, because of course the aliens are flying around and they're going wherever they go. There's two things. One, it has kind of a around the head sound happening, so you can hear in stereo, not in stereo, better than stereo, in 3D sound where something is compared to where you are. So you hear the little robot if he's up over here on the right. That's kind of cool. And then there's little visual cues. It will show you sort of red arrows at the edges of your vision that tell you which way to look for the creatures that are left. And so you can kind of overcome the field of view issue in something that is essentially a fast moving experience, which I don't think will be the typical HoloLens experience, frankly. But I thought it was really good. I mean,
I thought
it was good.
And you know what? I think it's really important that Microsoft's doing the HoloLens because they need to create the excitement. They have to show people they can do these kinds of things. But I can't. It's funny, Paul and I are totally changing roles here. I can't help but think this is the Kinect all over again.
God, I love the Kinect. I mean, the Kinect.
Remember when the Kinect came out? Everybody was so excited, and this was going to be the next big thing. It was so amazing, unbelievable, and then it kind of fizzled.
Not everybody, but yeah, I see. Yeah, I
want to be wrong about that.
Yeah,
but I'm worried about that.
This is really hard to portray, but and you just have to kind of visualize this. But you know, if you think about looking through a little rectangle and you're looking at stuff, I mean, if the weird part of it is that those things get cut off, and so it's not just that there's stuff you don't see because it's out of your vision. There's stuff that's partially in your vision, so it's the top of a cup, and then it gets cut off by the hard edge of that your view field. That stuff is it does take some getting used to, but the solar system thing at the end they thought was kind of cool. You didn't really walk into it and were like immersed in it, but you kind of look down on the solar system and you can see the relative positions of planets and their orbits, and think of that as an educational tool. It's cool.
Our experience of AR up to this point is an AR browser and a phone, which is an even smaller mail slot. But because you're not wearing headsets, you go, oh, well, that's as big as the phone screen. That's as big as it can
be. And so you're kind of holding it out looking.
They're trying to do this. And I feel like this is a product that's at least 2 years out and is waiting for much more sophisticated hardware capabilities.
Yep.
But see, to my reply to that would be you don't have to go from 1 to 10.
Right. I mean, you can release it next
step
year.
Step 2 is a tethered version.
Yeah.
You know, especially when you think about this thing not being a consumer product, it's kind of a vertical market product. There's going to be hand holding every step of the way for different customer types and the partners that are going to deliver the solutions that they're going to be using. They're very proud of the fact that it's like the world's first, untethered holographic computer or whatever they're calling it. Yeah. But it doesn't have to be.
I feel like they've aimed an arrow down the road.
Yeah.
At where do they know hardware capability, battery capability, graphics processing capability will be. And they say we can hit that point.
I don't know.
I feel like this is another case where they had to because of Oculus and the Vive and other things. And I'm sure they think that Google's working on AR as opposed to VR.
Yeah.
And they wanted to put, you know, they didn't want to be, as has happened in the past, we've got multi-touch.
You're right. You don't want to come out after someone else invents someone and say, yeah, we were working on that in the lab for 5 years. I actually think it's a little different. I actually don't think that they had an understanding where those things were going to be. What I think happened is that Satya Nadella and or other people in the SLT walked around and said, what are we working on? And a lot of times, okay, whatever. And they saw that thing I've been talking about, which is the holograms. Oh, my God, they're real. And they said, this has to happen.
Right.
You know, we don't have 5 years to make this happen. This has to happen. Solve this.
Yeah.
And I really do think the fundamental thing about HoloLens, which is that the realistic nature of the holograms blows up everything else. It's incredible. It's incredible. It's really is a life-altering technology. It's amazing. You have to look at it through a little thing. I get it, but it's amazing.
Yeah.
It really is amazing. And I think that's why it's happening because it's too amazing. Because God help us, God help Microsoft, I guess, if Google 2 years down the road just comes out with it, or Apple does, right. 3 years down the road, whatever it is.
Because
then they would be kicking themselves again. We did this and we didn't go anywhere. True. We're Bell Labs all over again. Right.
The difference here is they decided to do it in public and you take the hits for that. And that's what they're taking.
Yeah.
It comes down to communication. We're forgiving them for a lot here, but I think they could be very explicit about that every time they talk about it. Because I think people get very excited about
this. They should have been, maybe, said, look, this is 5 years out, guys.
We're not buying this for Christmas this year. Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah.
That kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, they did. They mistakenly said, didn't they, in April, that April demo, it'll be out in the fall. Didn't they say that? I thought they said it would be out when Windows 10 comes out.
Well, they said, you know what they said? They said in the Windows 10 timeframe. Okay, so Windows 10 is the last version of Windows. So that could mean
10 years. It could be. Between now and when the sun implodes upon itself and kills the solar system.
Yeah. Windows 10 is a big window, right?
Okay. Windows 10 timeframe.
Well, remember, we always had this notion of staggered, right? It was going to be Windows 10 and PCs. Phones were going to follow. HoloLens was going to follow. Surface Hub was going to follow. And there was going to be some kind of a, Xbox One would follow. Obviously some of those pieces have been, repositioned in time or whatever, but, especially Surface Hub lately.
Yeah.
We'll see. I don't know. This thing is Windows 10 to me is the least interesting part of it. I don't even.
Yeah. It could have been QNX as far as I'm concerned, right?
Yeah. Well, the only reason it's interesting is if you write a universal Windows app, it can run on the HoloLens.
That is interesting.
It can, but come on. I mean,
I know. You're still going to have to modify it. I know.
Tailoring an app for a screen size is one thing. I do think it's a neat capability. You can take an app, it runs on an Xbox, it runs on a phone, whatever. Right. Yeah. But, I mean, a HoloLens is like, it's a completely different kind of thing. I'm going to map this RSS reader to your desktop table here so you can read it while you're watching a movie.
My Audible book will be an imaginary book in front of me.
No, it'll be the narrator standing in front of you.
Oh, yeah. Hi, Leo.
You'll only see his midsection.
I'd like to read to you. You'll see this much. I think we should time to do the back of the book, wrap this up. You guys have been working hard. Christmas stuff to do, I'm sure.
Lots of stuff happened this week, and it's on our websites.
Well, you want to pick some other things? Is there anything I kind of skimmed through?
Big stuff. Huge?
We talked about Ray Ozzie and Taco coming to Microsoft.
Yeah, so Ray Ozzie's not coming back.
Not Ray, just Taco.
Just Taco. Yeah.
The worst name ever, by the way.
I know. Taco. Yeah.
It's not Taco. Taco.
The talking robot.
Not Taco.
Taco. Taco. The character.
Yeah. The other stuff. It was like, read our blogs. Give us some clips. Yeah.
We do write about that stuff a lot.
Therot.com, all about Microsoft.com. Therot.com, all about Microsoft.com. Go there. Now, it's time for Paul's tip of the week.
I'll blow through this. I have a lot of picks and stuff this week. I just wanted to, I know we don't have an Audible ad, but because it's the end of the year, I did look back on all of the Audible that I listened to and purchased this year, and I picked my favorites. And it's up on the web. You can go look at that.
I kind of did the same thing. I scraped the Audible page for my entire library and highlighted my favorites on my blog.
Earlier in the year, I did one for like tech
yeah,
books and things like that, business and tech. And this was just general, whatever, the stuff I like this year. So
The Mountain Man.
That's out there if you want to check that.
Therot.com.
Yeah.
Nice.
tip of the week, I just want to say for Xbox fans, Microsoft is now undergoing what they're calling the countdown, which is a 2+ weeks of 40% to 60% savings on Xbox games, 360 and Xbox One. They're describing it as the biggest Xbox game sale ever. I literally just threw my son $100 and said, hold on to this, because as the Call of Duty games come out, we're going to get them all digitally, because we play with a group of friends up the street every month and we play these older Call of Duty games in the 360, and the disc stuff is, we have discs that we can't read anymore and are going to get all this stuff digitally. So, two of the games are out now. Call of Duty Black Ops 1 and 2 are both available at big discounts right now through this sale. So there's a wave of games. It's available now through the 28th. There are daily deals, and then there's a second wave of games coming out on December 29th through January 7th. And so you can find that all at Xbox.com. And I don't have to worry about that second one. So software pick, I have two. The first is it's actually available on Mac and Windows. Obviously, it only really makes sense on portable computers, but it's called Trip Mode. And if you think about what Airplane Mode does on a portable computer or on a phone, it's like that, but more. It automatically reduces all of your mobile data consumption when you put it into this mode. It's something that, frankly, should be built into Windows. And so you're not going to get Windows updates. It really restricts the traffic coming down to your device, except for the stuff you're explicitly asking for. So the idea is, if you're going to be roaming or using a mobile hotspot off of your phone or whatever, it's not going to kill the data. You can buy it. It's $8. You can download a free trial. Check it out. It's called tripmode.ch. And I'll be writing it up soon. I haven't written an article about this yet. And then a second software pick. This one's a little embarrassing, but after years of misunderstanding, and or I should say not understanding Minecraft at all, I finally asked Raphael last week. I said, look,
what's the deal?
Can we just sit down on Skype and just tell me what I don't get it. Like, what's the point of this? And so he actually did something that I guess used to be built into the game. If you get Minecraft for Windows 10, it's not there, not that I can find. But he basically just walked me through the basics. You know, you start your world, you collect wood, you make stuff. You show me how to do that. You have like an oven, you have a thing that makes things, you have, you know, what you build a home, you do, you know, you actually literally mine, and then crafting is the building of things. And actually, this is an awesome game, and I feel like an idiot because I never understood that what a great game it was. In fact, the only problem I have with Minecraft is that you can't take the world that you've created on your computer, have it saved to OneDrive, and go access it on your phone, because the phone version of Minecraft, which is like Pocket Minecraft, doesn't have exactly the same features, and so I guess they can't quite line up. Although if you play it and look at it, they look almost exactly the same. It's a really cool game. I could see this is something I would, in fact, play on the road. In fact, I probably will. I mean, this is not a horrible way to pass time if you're on a plane or traveling or whatever it is, or if you're, in my son's case, a 17-year-old boy or whatever it is, it's a good game. And so thank you to Raphael for showing me that. Thank you to my son for making fun of me for finally picking it up.
You're going to play Minecraft? Come on, really?
I know.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a good game.
I knew all that stuff and I still think it's
boring. I know.
Okay.
I don't know. I like it. It's a good game.
You're cute. Hey, I want to know this because I'm there in the games with gold, and you know, they always have the regular edition, like Lara Croft Tomb Raider, regular edition, deluxe edition.
Yep.
Do you just automatically buy the deluxe edition?
Yeah. So one of the games in the sale, by the way, is the deluxe. Well, on sale, you mean, right? Yes.
Yeah.
On sale.
I mean, but it's like, so, I can get the deluxe digital version, and it's like $20 more. I'm looking at Tomb Raider, for instance.
Oh, Tomb Raider. So right now, I don't know Tomb Raider. You'd have to look and see what the difference is.
Downloadable content, right?
So what was that game? Titanfall, right? Huge AAA title that came out a year and a half ago. Yeah, I do too. But you can get that thing now for $5.
It
includes all of the DLC, all of it.
So if you don't have Titanfall. I do have Titanfall. But you know what I decided to do was buy the... I did buy the additional Destiny game pack because the general consensus is that fixed all the problems with Destiny and made it all
make
sense.
Oh, you mean that you just wander around and don't do anything?
Yes. They made it all
Destiny is like a 64-bit version of Minecraft. If you don't know what's going on, you just wander around and look at things.
Right.
It doesn't make any sense.
So you suggest
you know what's going on. Even Minecraft doesn't make a lot of sense because you get attacked by skeletons that have arrows and there are zombies It's very strange things that happen
it's
in
a
Minecraft.
Weird game.
But yeah, it's a weird game. It's cool though. I like it.
So you say just buy the deluxe because that way you'll get all the downloadable content, which you're going to buy anyway.
If that's what you want. In other words, if you're going to be playing it, if you're that serious about it.
My real problem is I often buy games and I play for an hour or two and then it's like, okay, I'm bored.
Yes. Right. Believe me, I know. I do that with virtually every game that is not called Call of Duty.
Yeah. You keep trying. You keep looking for that.
I'm desperate.
Next game.
To be more diverse, but it just doesn't seem to happen.
Well, I bought Rise of the Tomb Raider, but I didn't buy the deluxe version.
This is the most recent one, right?
Yeah, Rise of the Tomb Raider.
Yeah, I did not. I did the same thing. I bought the regular version.
I don't know.
Right.
I don't know. Okay.
If you know that you are a person who's not going to deep dive in this thing and spend, 1,700 hours on it, I would recommend not getting the deluxe version. Yeah. So might as well save some money.
No, but I always look at the games with gold and the deals with gold, and I will look at
these new deals. And pay attention to this countdown thing. There's some actually, if you go through the list, there's some really good savings in there.
Yeah. Yeah, you can get a real deal on Thief.
Well, this may be a game you've never played.
No, yeah. Good game in its day.
I also like that these things are they're digital.
I know, and I'm buying them here, and they will be on my Xbox One when I get home.
I love that.
I really do like that.
That's true on the 360, too, assuming it's on. But
that's the one thing I'm kind of intrigued. I haven't bought any 360 games for my Xbox One. I think I might do that, like Fallout.
Yeah, that was over the past week, 10 or 12 or whatever number of games they added to that list as well. Yeah.
All right, poor Mary Jo. Thank you.
Ooh.
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 No, ooh, like, ooh, they're done talking about gaming, yay.
She's honest, Paul. Our enterprise pick of the week.
The enterprise pick is Metanautics. Metanautix. What is that? That is a company Microsoft bought this week.
Oh.
They are a startup from Palo Alto.
Yeah.
And what they do is they have a product called Quest, which is a data compute engine. So they're a big data analytics company. Their product allows you to use SQL as the query language and query data, whether it's in the cloud or on-prem, across all different kinds of data stores. So you can use this to query SQL Server from Microsoft, but also Oracle and Teradata, MongoDB, Cassandra, Salesforce.com. You can use it to query anything pretty much. And Microsoft bought them. They didn't say how much they paid, but they did say they're going to be integrating that technology into both SQL Server going forward and the Cortana Analytics Suite. So Metanautics is the company. I think it was Microsoft's 20th acquisition for this year. Very interesting one. And it gives me one more chance to say Hadoop before the year is over. So that is why it's my enterprise.
Everybody drink.
She has to do that. I saw your sister bring you in something. Is that a little cup of a little Christmas cheer?
A little cup of cheer, yes. Yes. So now I'm going to, instead of a code name pick, I'm going to do a rumor of the week.
Okay.
And the rumor of the week is placeholders coming back to Windows 10.
Oh.
So if you remember, with OneDrive, we lost placeholders technology back with Windows 8.1, I think. That's when Microsoft removed placeholders. Brad Sams over at Thorat.com had a rumor this week saying placeholders will be back in Redstone 1, which is around June of next year. So I'm not sure placeholders themselves are going to come back. I think Microsoft has said in the past they're going to do some kind of a technology that will give you some of the features that were in placeholders but not actually be placeholders itself. And I had a chance to interview Jeff Taper recently, who's the executive vice president in charge of OneDrive. I asked him about about placeholders, and his answer to me makes me think it's not going to be placeholders that we get, but we're going to get something equivalent. And what he said was the OneDrive team is working right now hand in hand with the Windows 10 team on doing something. He characterized it more as a technology that would stand in for placeholders. And he also said to me, you know, one of the big reasons we got rid of placeholders is we felt that that technology should not have been implemented at the UI level. Instead, it should have been at the file system level. So I'm not so sure it's placeholders that will be back, but I think a technology to replace part of what we lost with placeholders will be back. And if it comes back by Redstone 1, I wouldn't be too surprised.
What's the time frame for which Redstone 1?
June 2016.
Okay.
But he wouldn't say.
So that's Windows, the famous Windows 11 I was talking about.
Yes, yeah. That's Windows 11.
That's Service Pack 2, Leo.
I can't believe I said Windows 11.
I know. When you were talking about Windows 11, I'm like, wait, what does he know that we don't?
I don't even know where that came from. All right. So good. Oh, that's good. Well, we'll get placeholders. Yep. It'll be a year after losing them, but we'll get them back.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think everybody deserves a nice Christmas ale.
Yes. Beer pick of the week. I have to do one more Christmas style beer because of Christmas. Yeah. So I'm picking as the beer pick something from a brewery called Hoppin' Frog. Hoppin' Frog is a brewery in Akron, Ohio, and they do a lot of different beers. But this one is called the Hoppin' Frog Barrel Aged Frog Christmas Ale.
Wow.
And what it is it's characterized as a winter warmer, which means it uses a lot of the winter spices like nutmeg and cinnamon in the beer. But this one was aged in Kentucky bourbon barrels on top of all that. So it's really smooth, kind of has that bourbon tinge to it. It clocks in at 8.6, which isn't horrendous for a bourbon barrel beer, but it would be good for all those hardworking Santas who want to retire after putting out the presents.
Nice.
And we wanted to say happy holidays to all the Windows Weekly listeners with a nice beer pick.
Yay.
So there you go.
I hear Liz was in town last night, and they all went to Taps.
They went to Taps,
they
right?
They tipped a Pliny just for you.
Nice.
Temerity Joe! Temerity Joe! So say us all. What a great year this has been. Really fun. I've been more engaged in the show this year than I was in all years previous. Maybe you noticed.
There was so much happening.
But it was exciting, and it was the year that Microsoft woke up, and from its nap. And I'm glad to say we were here to cover it, and nobody better to do it than these two: Mary Jo Foley, allaboutmicrosoft.com, and Paul Thurrott, who began his new venture at Thurrott.com this year.
By the way, is it much darker on where we are? It just seems like it's gotten dark.
Yeah. It's I turned dark. The TV down because you were so refulgent.
And oh, okay. I just it's literally like it's gotten dark.
It's also dark out right
it's
now.
It's winter.
Yeah. It is. Yeah.
It's winter. This is, in fact, we are now officially in winter as of last night when fall ended. And, of course, everyone knows the real reason for all these holidays this time of year is it's so freaking depressing.
Yeah. Kidding.
Yeah. Well, we've crossed the Rubicon, right? So now the days are actually getting longer.
We have. Days are getting longer. That was the longest night of the year last night.
I think I noticed it this morning. It was like a fraction of a second more bright.
Just a little bit better.
Something.
It's getting better every day. Yep. And yes, Groove Music will have they have the Beatles on
Christmas they will.
Tomorrow night?
Yes, they will.
So. That's nice.
That's a Christmas miracle, too.
Yeah.
It is.
Have a wonderful holiday, you guys. Are you staying home, Paul?
I am.
Okay.
That's good for me. I don't. Yeah, you often do not stay home.
It's nice to be home for the holidays.
It's nice to be home.
Yeah. And we will next week, as I mentioned, be doing the best of great stuff from all of last year. And we'll be back again in 2 weeks, January 6th, at 11 a.m. I'm sorry. Yeah, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1900 UTC for brand new Windows Weekly. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year, Paul and Mary Jo. We'll see you all next year.
Thanks, you too.
Bye-bye.